Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth, with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified coach. Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth, with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening, listeners. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are so happy that you were able to join us this evening. I am so glad that everyone is in the chat room, and the chat room is starting to have some chatters, and we expect a very exciting show for you tonight. Tony, I am really excited about the topic tonight.
Yeah, we had some pre-show conversations about this topic, and it is going to be an exciting night because everybody that I know has definitely dealt with our topic one time or another in their life.
I absolutely agree, and I think everybody's really going to be excited. I just want to tell all the chatters and everyone listening, everyone that's dialed in listening, we really appreciate you all, and feel free to contact us with your comments, suggestions, and questions. I always like to give out my email address at the beginning of the show and also before we close. So if you have any comments or questions, suggestions, feel free to email us at Kathy@CHollowayHill, that's CHollowayHill.com. So please keep those emails coming because we love to hear about that. Now, the dial-in number for today's show, if you have a question or a comment, is 646-478-3060, and I'm sure we're probably going to have a lot of questions and comments about this topic tonight. So, now, Tony, before I get into the topic of discussion for tonight, I just want to give a quick preview of some of the upcoming show topics because we've got a lot of exciting things coming up over the next few weeks.
All right.
Next week, we're going to be talking to, first let me ask you, can everyone hear me okay? If you can hear me okay in the chat room, can a few people say yes, no, or whatever the case may be?
Yes.
You can hear me okay, Tony?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right, great. I didn't see anybody in the chat room say yes or no, so I'm hoping everyone can hear me.
Do you want to explain to them why you've got a new mechanism?
Well, actually, yes, I have a new headset, and I'm pretty excited about it, so I just wanted to make sure that everything was working well and that my listeners can hear me. Okay, I'm getting yeses now. Wonderful.
Great.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, great. So before I'll just move on, before we get into the topic of discussion, I just wanted to give you guys a quick preview of some of our upcoming show topics. Next week, we're going to be talking to a national best-selling author. His name is William R. Patterson. And he's going to be talking to us about building wealth on a budget. So that's going to be a very good topic because in these days and times when every penny counts and gas is about $15 a gallon, is that about how much it costs now, Tony?
It feels like it.
Somewhere close to that. He's going to be able to provide us some very valuable tips on how to cope and plan for the future, for your financial future. So that's going to be a very good show topic, and that's next week. He has a good book out. It's called The Barren Son, and he has gotten numerous awards on that book. So we're real excited about him coming next week. And then the following week after that, we're going to have Dr. Jane Rowan come to us and talk about incest and childhood abuse. So that's going to be a very exciting show topic as well. And then the week after that, we're going to have Miss Kimberla Lawson Rovey. And for those of you who don't know who Kimberly Lawson Roby is, she is a critically acclaimed New York Times bestselling author of the infamous Casting the First Stone. And those series of books about the Reverend Curtis Jackson, or I'm sorry, the Reverend Curtis Black, are just wonderful. So if you don't know anything about Kimberly, I would advise you to learn quickly, because she is up and coming and she is a great author. So she's going to be here talking about her new book, which is entitled One in a Million. And Kimberly sent me some of her promotional books because we're going to be giving out some free autographed books during that show. And the details about how to sign up for that are on my website. So please visit my website at www.chollowayhill.com for information about that. And I've read the book, and trust me, it's wonderful. You don't want to miss it. So I am really excited about that, so stay tuned. Now, the other thing I wanted to say before we get into our show topic tonight to my listeners, I have a lot of new listeners that are coming in this evening, and I just want to let everybody know that I have a wonderful co-host, Mr. Tony Lamont, and he didn't know that I was going to say anything like this, so this is going to be kind of new for him to even hear. But Tony is very, very busy. He is one of the hardest working men I know in the broadcasting industry, and there are so many events and activities and tasks that he's involved in, and I appreciate him taking his time every Wednesday night to come and co-host this show with me, because there are so many other things that Tony could be doing. He has either been associated with, interviewed, or had some type of activity where he's been involved with so many different celebrities, sports figures, entertainment celebrities, and this man is very busy. So, Tony, I just want to say thank you so much for taking your time to be part of the Living by Design show. It means a lot to me and my listeners. I get a lot of email notes telling me that they really appreciate you, and so do I. So just wanted to give you a little shout-out.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very flattered by that comment, and I just want to say that I wouldn't have it any other way. This is a wonderful show, a wonderful place to be, and truly you have a great topic and a great idea of what you want to do for young women and really people in general, because you want to make sure that their lives are better and they live
absolutely
their lives. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of your show.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is absolutely the purpose of my show for you new listeners, is to enhance and advance the lives of everyone, not just women, but everyone. A lot of my topics do focus on women, but if men can advance and benefit, then that's all the better. So I'm truly excited about that. The show topic for tonight, dealing with dysfunctional toxic family members. I know that there may be quite a bit of humor in this show tonight, but we're going to try to take it very seriously, because the description that I put up on my webpage for the topic of the discussion tonight, I gave quite a few descriptions of some of the toxic family members: the chronic gossiper, the troublemaker, the bully, the control freak, the pessimist, the meddler, the moocher, the snitch, the one who lives in Pity City, the hypochondriac, the adult children that absolutely just never will go away. They just keep coming back. The list goes on and on and on and on. So we're going to address every single one of those tonight. So, Tony, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I wanted to make sure. I have my new headset, so I just want to make sure everything's working well. I'm going to go ahead and bring on my guest, Dr. Suzanne Gold. She is very, very knowledgeable in this area, and she has been in the business for a tremendously long time, and I'm going to allow her to go ahead and just, give you a little bit of her bio information. So I'm going to go ahead and bring Suzanne Gold on the line. Suzanne, can you hear me?
I hear you.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Wonderful.
I'm just talking with you.
Yes, and I am so glad you were able to join us tonight, because this is a very, very exciting topic that we're getting ready to get into.
Well, everybody has a family, huh?
Yes, everybody does. Everybody absolutely does, and I know you heard a couple of those descriptions that I gave, and one of them, at least one of those types, exists in probably just about every family.
Yes.
So, Suzanne, I'm going to allow you just a few minutes to go ahead and give us a little bit about your background and your area of expertise and some of the projects you've worked on and some of your knowledge level.
Okay. I have a bachelor's and master's degree in psychology from Temple University. And even more qualified than that is that I grew up in a dysfunctional family myself.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was still is loved to be the center of attention, and also was very controlling and very difficult to handle. My father, he was basically a good guy, but he couldn't take living with my mother, and so he tried to stay away as much as possible. My strategy was to hide so that I could just get out of the way of everybody, and I was kind of a bookworm when I was a kid.
Right.
But the most difficult situation is with my sister, who is now schizophrenic and in a mental hospital. That really took the brunt, I think, of all the dysfunction that was swirling around in our family.
I teach
classes in surviving a dysfunctional family, and I talk with private clients, and it's such a huge topic. I was reading today where there's some number like 57 million people in dysfunctional families in the United States.
Right, right.
And most of those people don't know what to do with it, and they may not even know that there is anything that they could do about it. And so that's a big part of what I try to instill in people who talk to me.
Suzanne, if you don't mind, I'm just going to back up here 1 second. I did have something that I wanted to share with my listeners, because when I gave the shout-out to Tony, I was explaining to my listeners that Tony is involved in so many different activities and he interviews so many different people. And sometimes on my show, I like to play a little audio clip of some of the celebrities that he's interviewed, just so that my listeners can get a feel for how our celebrities also struggle with some of the same problems that we struggle with. Just because they're in the limelight and just because they're a celebrity and rich and live in a different type of lifestyle than us, they're human, and they still have the same issues that we have. Sometimes they have great family relationships, sometimes they don't. So if you don't mind, Suzanne, I'm going to just play a quick little audio clip here of a interview. It's just a small segment of an interview that my co-host Tony Lamont was able to talk with Ashante, who is in the entertainment industry. And I'm going to just go ahead and play this quick little clip now, just so that I'd like to share these types of things with my listeners, just to let them know how the other side lives. So
okay.
I'm going to put that on now.
Now, I think I remember reading an article. It was you, your mom, and your sister. And I want to say it was probably in Sister to Sister. I think that's what it was, the magazine.
Uh-huh.
Talk a little bit about how close, I mean, that close-knit family is and the importance of your mom and your sister are in your life.
Oh, my gosh. We are such a close-knit family, and it's all sincere and it's all genuine. You know, my mom and I, we have such an incredible relationship. My little sister, she's 19. You know, we have an incredible relationship, and we've gotten way closer, obviously, because we're both older. And, you know, this business, like I said, is really a shame because there's a lot of cutthroat, disgusting, you know, crazy things that happen. But I'm just really thankful that I have my flesh and blood supporting me and everything. You know, I don't have to worry about that when I go home and I'm in my house and I'm chilling. You know, it's an amazing feeling to know that my family has my back and I have my family's back. And at the end of the day, it's more about family.
And, you know, the most amazing thing about that interview with Ashante, and there was a whole lot more, but, of course, we can only give you a segment of it, was the fact that her mom and her sister live in her home. They have their own area in the home. The house is that big. But the reality is they function as a unit and as a business, and it is that that function and not the dysfunction in their lives that allow them the opportunity to do that. So we definitely had an opportunity to share some of that conversation, and she's a great person to take a look at when it comes to family supporting you and being functional, even working through that dysfunction in your life.
That is right. That is absolutely correct. And Suzanne, I'm sure you have probably encountered so many different situations and problems and issues when it comes to dysfunctional families. As you was explaining, you yourself have been involved with quite a bit of situations and problems in your own upbringing, which we all have, which we all have.
Oh, yes. My family of origin, and my mother's family and my father's family didn't get along with each other. So the pattern has been going down through generations, which I think is usual in dysfunctional families, that people don't even realize that what they're doing is not working for them and is also spilling over onto the people that they love. And
absolutely.
And things get worse when you don't recognize those things and you don't stop to re-examine, you know, where you're coming from and what you really would rather be doing.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you, just for our listeners, can you define what is the true definition of a dysfunctional family? What is it, when we talk about a dysfunctional family, what in your opinion qualifies as dysfunctional? Because I know a lot of times we say, well, I don't get along with my brother or my sister or one of my aunts or uncles or whatever. But what truly is the technical definition for dysfunctional?
Well, I'm not sure if there's a technical definition because people look at it from different ways. But the way that I look at it is that, and also there are different degrees of being functional or dysfunctional. And I think that nobody comes out alive. We all come here as spirits on a journey, you know, to find our purpose in life. And the qualities of being functional or dysfunctional exist to different levels in different families. But the way I look at it, you can tell by the nature of the interactions between the family members. Are they beneficial? Are they uplifting, or are they demeaning and deadening? How do people treat each other? What's the tone of the family? Do they like each other? Do they do things together? And and in terms of the individuals in the family, how do they make decisions? What do they base their ideas on? How do they behave to other people in the family and out of the family? If there's differences in that, that's pretty dysfunctional. It's almost like you're kind of splitting yourself up into Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, and behaving one way for some people and differently for another.
Right. Now, I got a question from the chat room, which is actually one of the questions on my list, and it's a great question. Sometimes we feel so disconnected from our family because I may be going one direction. I'm a very spiritual person, and I feel like there are other members in my family that aren't, and sometimes I just feel disconnected. So how do you keep from getting caught up in the dysfunctional behavior? How do you keep yourself set apart while still allowing your family, letting your family know you love them and you want to support them and you're there for them, but you don't want to get caught up in whatever it is they may be struggling with in their subconscious?
Yeah. I think that you kind of have to make a choice or a decision every time you get involved with someone and see, you know, whether it makes you feel better or whether it makes you feel worse. To me, that's a big decision about, you know, which way to go. Because your instincts are really what lead you. This is not mathematics or science. It's just an internal experience. And you have
right.
to follow your heart and pay attention and respect your inclinations and the ideas that you get and how you feel about being with someone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a household that has a lot of dysfunction and you want to maintain your sanity, me, one of the things that you do is limit your communication. Don't get into the argument. Keep your distance. Don't get entangled. Don't let people ask for your opinions, because you never know where they're going to put you in a box about what you said. Don't share too much about what you're thinking or feeling if you're in a situation where people are poised to attack you because of their own interests or their own ways of looking at things. But the most important thing is to put yourself first. That may sound selfish, but if you're not working well with yourself, you don't have anything else to give.
Right. Absolutely correct. Now, a lot of times, I even struggle with this quite a bit myself, in that sometimes family members are so unhappy, or I don't know whatever their situation is, but whenever I try to reach out to them, we go through the first 5 or 10 minutes discussion talking about that I don't call them enough, or I don't do this enough, or I don't do that enough. So they try to make me feel guilty. How do I not get caught up in that guilt? And just because I'm human too, and I have feelings and desires too, so how do I counteract that and not allow them to make me feel guilty? Because I do love them, and I do want to hear what they have to say, but I don't want to feel guilty because I'm not doing what they want me to do.
Yeah, I think you do, as much as you can without hurting yourself. And you also remember that, you're your first priority, and you can't change that, and you can't stretch it to be what somebody else wants you to be. You've come here to do what to share what you have and to be who you are. And someone trying to change you, you can't give in to that, because it's not your path and it's not going to work for you. And if
right.
somebody is pressuring you to do something that you don't want to do, you really just have to respectfully and quietly say, no, that's not for me. And if
right.
they don't like that, what can you do? It's not up to you to change them. It's not possible to change anyone else.
Right.
But you have to do the best that you can in life and in the situations that you're in, and keep yourself protected. One of the ways that you can do that is to spend some time just being by yourself and looking through, what happened through the day or through the week, what kinds of things upset you, and whether there really is anything that you can do about it. And go ahead and do that, or just learn to be at peace with the fact that sometimes there are problems you can't solve.
Now, Suzanne,
right.
I wanted to ask you, in some situations, how do you identify, because some folks will say that, well, we have a fairly normal family, but when someone on the outside is looking, they get a sense of dysfunction in that family because it just doesn't seem norm. Is the level of dysfunction relative to the family and how the family works together, or should there be a sense of normalcy as a whole? Should families look very similar, or can we look at a family and go, okay, that family right there, that's a dysfunctional family? Or is it the actions, or are there some normal things that we should be looking for?
Well, I think it's a question of percentages. Everybody has things that they do well and things that are stumbling blocks for them. And you need to see how much you can put your life on the path of the things that you want and the things that you do well, and then how much attention you need to put into those stumbling blocks so you can see where they came from and why they're getting in your way. Sometimes you have to go way back in your past and look at the incidents that happened that made you uncomfortable then, because those kinds of things stay in your consciousness and influence you as you grow and make choices. You have to pay attention to, what's making you feel better and what's making you feel worse. And if you do this with respect, because, all of us are children of God, and no matter how dysfunctional somebody is, it doesn't mean that they're bad or evil. It just means that they're on the wrong track. And it's,
that's right.
It's not impossible to get back on the track that you'd like if you can face yourself and go through the kinds of things that get in your way and let yourself feel the emotions that come to you in the course of life itself and not judge yourself and not judge others, but just continue to stay on the direction that makes you feel like the person that you want to be.
So also along those lines, Suzanne, and I absolutely agree when you said don't judge others because they may be in a different place. How can you, is there any way that you can gently help guide those people to a better place, to a more peaceful place where they can start feeling better?
I think you can if you don't do it from a point of view that you're better than they are.
Okay.
If you just do it from the point of view that, you know, I love you, I can see that you're hurting, is there anything I can do about it, you know, or even make some suggestions, you know, let's go to the beach or let's, you know, anything that might uplift the person so that they can change the focus. Because that's, you know, your focus on creates what happens to you in life and how you feel about it. And if you want to look at the dark side, you're going to feel bad. And if you want to look at light, you're going to feel better.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
And it's a habit that you have to create.
Right.
You have to kind of think of it in every day, and every time that something little niggling thing in the back of your mind is telling you that, you know, something's wrong, you have to stop and pay attention and see where you got stuck and then, you know, let it go. Letting it go is as important as going through it, because you can't hold on to grudges for your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You go, okay, well, that's what I learned out of that one, and that's good, and I'm not going to do that again, and now what do I want?
Right. Now, if you recognize that you are starting to exhibit some of these toxic behaviors yourself,
mm-hmm.
What's some of the things you can do to break out of your own toxic behavior patterns? Because if you've experienced this so much as a child, because you even mentioned that you had been through some things as a child, and you know these things still live inside you as a result of your upbringing, now that you're an adult, what are some of the things that you can do to help pull you out of those patterns? Because, of course, recognition is the first key, and we'll assume that we recognize some of those behaviors. And once we recognize that, how can we try to move beyond that to do some other things after we recognize it?
I think you have to take it as a given that, you know, negative things are going to happen in your life. If you try and fight against that, then you're making things even that much worse. And so you don't want to totally put your attention on the dysfunctional parts of your life, but you do need to recognize them and decide how to handle them. And one of the most effective things really is very simple, is to notice, to kind of change your focus from what's wrong to noticing what you love and what your dreams are and what you'd like to create in your life. And then put all your focus on that. How do you create that? How do you make that happen? Do you have to learn some specific skills? Do you have to learn to swim? You know, whatever is going to uplift you again and refocus you on having the life that you want rather than the life that you don't want.
Correct. Absolutely.
You have to let your emotions play through. You can't resist the bad stuff because it only makes it worse. It's like putting a big, big boulder in the flow of your energy.
Absolutely agree.
When you feel bad, when you feel hurt or even physically sick or sad or, you know, any of the what we usually call negative emotions, just you have to take a look at them as part of your spiritual evolution so that you can get something out of the difficult situations as well as being able to create what you want. So you need to let those emotions come in and feel them. And remember times when you felt like that as a kid. That's a good way to break up those patterns, is to go back in your history and your memory and see, where did this start? Who was it that I was dealing with at the time? What did they say to me? And then let that, let yourself feel either the pain or the joy or the confusion or whatever of that moment. And let, and if you have to cry or scream or dance, to put all your energy into that and think of it as a cleansing, as a new beginning. And do that over and over each time. Sometimes each time you get your feelings hurt or you don't get what you wanted or somebody doesn't like you, just, you have to go back inside to find in your own heart your strength and your clarity and your direction.
Isn't that, Suzanne, what happens, or if they don't take that action, don't folks or parents or the adults in particularly children's lives have a tendency to just hand down this dysfunction because those emotions that they weren't able to deal with as youngsters and now as adults, they're still not able to deal with it. They're just passing on that dysfunction?
Absolutely. And that, yeah, that's, and that can be so difficult to handle because it's kind of like the pain in your heart and the confusion in your mind are both fighting at you from different directions. So you really have to slow down, find a quiet place to be, and kind of unravel the strings that have tangled up in your heart and in your mind.
And you're so right, Tony, in the comment you just made, because that's my very, very big concern is the children, because the children are depending on us to be role models.
Yeah.
And unless we resolve our issues and unless we cleanse all of the toxic behaviors and thoughts, children are always observing us, always.
Yeah. And imitating.
And imitating, exactly. And unless we cleanse that out of our spirit, we're going to unknowingly pass it on to our children, and then the cycle will just continue over and over and over into one generation, the next generation, and, you know, it just continues to be handed down.
Yeah. And you need to do a lot of apologizing, too, you know, because we make mistakes.
Absolutely.
We get stimulated by old patterns, or somebody says something to hurt us, or we say something to hurt someone else. You need to be ready to let that stuff go in a way that's going to allow the relationship to improve rather than fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to compliment people, how to say good things, how to accept or how to stay quiet when something is happening that you can't get behind, but not to try and destroy that for anybody else. Everybody has to learn their own lessons and find their own path in life.
Yeah.
Now, Suzanne, I want to ask, because there is a sense that this happens in every family, but everyone I know has that one relative or that one family member that just, regardless of how much you are cooperative, how much love you show them, how much understanding you give them, their level of dysfunction is just so great and so toxic that it seems to permeate everything, even the walls of the room. When that person arrives at a family function, the energy changes in the room. What do we do with that kind of person? Do we just not invite them? Do we just not allow them to be involved in things? How do we handle situations like that?
Well, I think you try to be neutral, because if you try to bump up against them or to change them, then it just stimulates their dysfunction, really, and then they take it out on you. I think you have to figure out strategies, you know, or what does this person do that bugs you, and how can you kind of dance around that so that it can work out for you and not make them worse. One thing that I do is make lists of comments to use that you can say to someone who has, you know, done or said something that's bothered you, that you can come back with a rejoinder that isn't nasty or insulting, but just kind of turns the energy in a different way. Simple things, too, like if somebody's bending your ear and just talking about something that you don't want to hear about, you can say, you know, I mean, you can even tell the little white lie, like, oh, my goodness, my soup is boiling over. You know, anything that can get you out of the situation that's toxifying you without making things worse.
And at some point, a few of my people in the chat room are asking, because I'd also like to know as well, at what point do you decide that it's time to distance yourself from the toxic people? Because they're just not getting it. They're not getting it, and you know they're bringing you down. It's no longer adding value to your life, even though you love them. There's nothing that can be done. At what point do you distance yourself and just say, I have to just remove myself from that situation?
Well, I think that you said it quite well. Is at the point where you just are going overboard in there to make them happy and at your own expense.
Right.
And that's just something that you know within your heart. Is this working for me or isn't it? That's the kind of question you want to ask yourself every time you feel like there's just something wrong. You may not know what it is, just this vague, you know, disturbance in the force that and you can't figure out what it is, that you just have to kind of draw back and say, this is just isn't working for me. And, you know, it's not, you don't have to blame it on anybody, but you have to take the time to be by yourself with yourself to find out where those little catches are in your energy and how you can create the kind of background that you want in your life.
Exactly. Now, Suzanne, I'm going to go to the lines here and take a caller and see if this person has a question.
Okay, sure.
Area code 347, you're on the line. Do you have a question?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, you can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi.
Hi, what's your name?
This is Dr. Kiernan.
Hi, Dr. Kiernan.
Hi. I was just wondering, because as we were talking and seeing every comment in the chat room that, you know, we keep repeating, you know, about the family members that are toxic and having to distance yourself, I agree with Dr. Gold in terms of trying to be neutral. But as Tony mentioned, there are times when, you know, they just being in their presence can be overwhelming. And I find that it's not good for you yourself to take that type of abuse, I would call it, because some people's attitudes are, if you have more than them or appear to have more than they do, then they feel that you're responsible for everything in their life and everything that goes wrong. And at some point, it is important that you just really stay away from them, not because you're better than them, but it's better for you not to expose yourself to that type of treatment or that type of abuse, because to me that's abusive when you have to walk around with like you're on eggshells with your family members.
Right.
You shouldn't be the person that takes the fall for everything that goes wrong in their life, especially when you've been there for them and you try to help
right.
them. So that was just my comment in terms of, you know, the dysfunctional part. I really believe that we, at some point, we have everybody in our families. We can see them, but there's some that we can function with in their dysfunction, and there's some that we just can't.
Yeah, and where you draw the line is whether that's demeaning or destroying you, or whether it's uplifting you. And you need to, you know, look at your self-esteem and your health and your passions in life, and if your family members or your boss or whoever it is that is hard to deal with, you can't go to the point where you can't solve it. It's, you know, it's something that they're doing, and you can't go to the point where you're trying so hard that it's making you sick, either figuratively or literally, because you can't take care of your own needs when you're too tangled up in somebody else's. And actually, that never works anyway, because we each have to create our own realities and our own way of being that's satisfying and that supports us so that we can build the lives that we want.
Exactly.
That's absolutely correct. And you know, Dr. Kiernan, you make a very good point, and it just kind of actually makes me think of another scenario that I really would like to get a little bit of input on. When you have a situation where you have an adult child that is, the adult child has made quite a few bad choices in their life, and they make you feel guilty because you don't help pull them out of that toxic situation. They're making the choice to be there, but they want you to continually come to their rescue. and save them and rescue them, financially support them, and, you know, and you love them. All parents love their children. So what can you do in a situation like that? When your child just doesn't get it.
I think sometimes you just have to go for tough love. You know, you can't let someone else wreck your life. If they're you know, making you do stuff that you don't want to do, or that they're, you know, trying to get support or money from you because they don't want to work, or whatever the situation is, you have to be very careful that you're not doing this at your own expense. And also, realize that there's no law that you have to be in contact with your relatives. You only want to put energy into people who uplift you. And the ones who try and drag you down, you don't need. And sometimes that's good for them, actually. They start asking, well, why did she start avoiding me? And if they ask you that question, then you have the truth to tell them, and hopefully it will help. But their problems are not your fault.
Right.
And you can't really save them from them. You know, everything has to come from within.
That's true. I know that's a very, very tough one for a lot of people.
It is tough.
I have, in my experience, that's a really tough one, because you're right, tough love is absolutely necessary, but that's one I know a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah.
Including myself.
When my sister was all kind of on the verge of her schizophrenia, she came to my house and asked if she could move in with me.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And that was very, very difficult. It actually came to the point where I said, no, I can't handle it. You know, I can't have you here. It's just too, you know, I have my work, I have my husband, I have, you know, my life, my to do, and, you know, I'm not sure that you can, you know, contribute to that. And, it was very, very difficult. But again, if you're not there for yourself, there's nothing you can do to help anybody else. So you have to start
exactly
at home.
Right. Now, when you told your sister that, what happened with her? I mean, did she finally get it and start getting herself together, or did she hold a grudge against you? Or,
well, the first thing she did actually was she had tried to get herself committed to the mental hospital that I worked in.
Oh.
And the head psychiatrist called me on the Monday. It was the weekend when she tried to do that. And he called me on the Monday morning and asked me what I thought about her. Did she need to be hospitalized or not? Actually, at that time, I didn't think she did need to be hospitalized, but since then, she continued to deteriorate, and, you know, it was one of those situations where I just had to go to say, I can't take this on myself, and I just, you know, believe that, you know, her spirit is in charge, and this is something that she needs for her own personal evolution, and it's not, you know, it's not my job.
Now, I want to take the last 15 minutes to just talk a little bit about, and please excuse me for laughing, but a lot of the people that wrote into my website with comments and questions, they wanted me to ask about dysfunctional in-law situations.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily your immediate family, but if you marry into a situation and your in-laws are extremely dysfunctional, such as a controlling mother-in-law or a controlling spouse, or, you know, those types of situations, how do you handle those types of situations? If your spouse doesn't see it as a problem, but your mother-in-law or sister-in-laws or brother-in-laws, any in-laws are clearly controlling or dysfunctional, how do you handle that?
Well, I think you have to handle that just between you and your partner, because, again, you can't change these people. You can't change other people's behavior and their attitudes. And if you're marrying into a family, I think you need to sit down and have a long talk. I mean, you meet the people before you get to decide you're going to get married, apparently, generally. But I think you have to sit down and have a long talk with your intended and see really if you're on the same wavelength, you know, and if you want to not live with within 100 miles of his family because you don't like them, and he thinks you have to live next door, that marriage is not going to work. And you need to go through those things before you even get the idea or make any choices about how you're going to live your life. You have to see that the person that you want to live with is on the same wavelength as you are. And you need to do that before you're married and before you get caught into the dysfunction of the family. When my husband and I decided to get married or started talking about getting married, we went out and kind of had a business meeting. We went to a nice restaurant, but we had a business meeting about how are we going to handle this and how is this going to go and who's going to do this and who's going to do that. And so when we actually did get married and live together, you know, we knew what we were up for and we knew what our jobs were. And it has worked out quite well.
Well, that's great, and because I know that blended families is something that is very, very difficult to handle, and the situations that I've been involved in or the people that I have spoken with about this particular topic, I always tell them exactly what you just said, that you have to make sure that, I mean, choosing a partner is just like, I mean, I hate to make it so technical, but it's just like choosing a career.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to investigate. You have to assess the situation. You have to assess yourself, your core beliefs, your core characteristics, as well as your potential partner. And that includes understanding their background, their family, where they came from, and all of those things.
Yeah.
And unless you take the time to investigate those things and understand exactly what it is you're getting into, you can't expect to go into a marriage and change everything around. I mean, if you have stepchildren, you can't expect to pull your spouse away from the children that they may have brought into the marriage from a different marriage.
Yeah. One of the things that you can do, if it's not that easy for the participants to foresee what might happen, is to find a good counselor who can just kind of mediate for you to move through the confusion until you come to agreement. And that's especially, I think, necessary in a blended family like you're talking about, because either through divorce or death or whatever, you know, people are feel like something is missing. And you have to kind of look at a whole new perspective of life if you're going to blend families together. And you need someone who's not interested in the outcome, really, who has no stake in it, but who can just find the truth in everyone and see if that all can come together or not. Because it doesn't really matter. It's not good or bad whether it comes together or it doesn't come together, because you're going, whatever happens, you're going in the direction that you need to be going in. You're always being led by your own spirit to the things that you need to learn and the things that you want to have and how to get them.
And Tony, do you have any comments on that one?
Well, I just, when you take a look at the blended family and you take a look at those situations, I know that's one of the challenges that I always hear about, is those parents are in a peculiar position, because particularly if the children don't get along with the step parent, it's always they're caught in the middle, and what should they do? And they're always wondering, what do I do, and how do I handle this situation? Do I take the side of my spouse, or do I take the side of my child? And why should I have to make a decision to take a side at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think that you do that with a good counselor. It's so difficult and touchy situation, and especially if there's a difference. Real differences, or one person who thinks they have the answer. You really need someone who doesn't care about the outcome, except that it's better than what you came with.
Yeah, because a lot of times, even though you have those discussions up front, knowing you're getting ready to move into a blended family situation, a lot of times you will have those discussions up front and let your potential partner know that I do have children, and my children are very important to me, and we are going to have to be understanding and have compromise and those types of things. And the partner will agree, and then as soon as the marriage takes place, they flip and do a 180, and they're an entirely different person.
Well, I think you need to do a little test before you do it, and you get the families together, and you create some kind of a exercise or an outing that everybody might be interested in, and then you watch what happens.
Right.
And you just make commentaries about, you know, if we're going to make this work for everyone, then we have to, whatever it is, you know, you have to stop hitting your stepsister or whatever it is that's, you know, in the way. But, you know, again, it's something that you really have to be paying attention to and following up on. You can't just hope about this.
That's absolutely correct. It's a very, very serious situation because when you look at statistics, 60% of first marriages end in divorce, and then second marriages are somewhere in the upper 60s, 68, and then third marriages are like in the 70s. And that has to be because of the blended family situation. It's just people are not taking the time to investigate and make sure that everything is clean, clear, and everybody's on the same wavelength when it comes to understanding and those core beliefs.
Yeah. And there will be fights and disagreements.
Of course.
Those things have to be done respectfully
right. Rather
than being a loose cannon and blaming things on other people.
Now, Dr. Goh, let me ask you this, because I have a family member and love her to death, but she feels like when there's dysfunction, whether it's at a family gathering or a family reunion or just everybody just going someplace at the same time, when there is a conflict, she has to be the one to be the mediator and settle things. What do I, because her settling things or trying to actually causes more dysfunction. How do we handle somebody like that?
I think rather than when she starts that, maybe you could do something like invite everyone else, you know, into a circle so that everyone can have their own opinion so that she doesn't get to dominate.
Gotcha.
You don't want to insult her and you don't want to make her feel like she's not welcome, but you also don't want her to be able to run things when you don't like the way she does it.
Okay. Thank you for that, because I've known people like that, and like I said, I have a family member that does that, and we never want to make her feel bad, but it always seems that when she starts out, it always ends up that someone's going to say something that is going to make her feel bad because she just won't quit. So I like the engaging the entire, bringing people into the circle and doing that, because I think we can accomplish that a lot better.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. There's,
and also, I mentioned before, to have a bunch of stock phrases that you can use, you know, when somebody is trying to overpower you or is trying to turn around, you know, what was intended. And if you can just have at the tip of your tongue little things to say like, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me. You know, without insulting anybody, but just, you know, standing your ground in a polite way. You can make, you can think about how you would talk to that person and what you could say that would demonstrate what you want without hurting her feelings.
That's correct.
And, you know, keep it in your pocket to pull out the next time she starts doing her thing.
Gotcha.
And I would like to just ask, because I know this is something that probably quite a few people have struggled with. Someone emailed me and asked this question because they have actually a couple of family members that are what we call hypochondriacs. And a lot of times they do that to get attention from other family members. What would be your suggestion on that? Because a lot of times you don't really know if the person may be really sick or they're just crying wolf or whatever the case may be. So how do you handle situations like that when they've done it so many times? And 9 times out of 10, they're probably not sick, but they just want that attention.
I think you have to, first of all, the first time through, you have to just take it as they present it, I think. And you sit and see what feels true to you and what feels like they're just making it up. And then you have to follow through with your own instincts. And again, you have to do that in a way that's not insulting. Like if somebody's telling you, you know, that you did something bad, you can say something like, "I'm sorry you feel that way." You know, if you don't think it was a bad thing to do, you don't need to say, "I'm sorry I was a bad person," but "I'm sorry that you feel that way." You just turn it around on them in a way that they can handle without feeling like they got shut down.
Right, because that is something that is, it's very sensitive. Because
yeah.
You care about the person, you don't want to tell them, okay, well, you know, I know you're just you know, trying to get attention. So you never ever know. It's something that you really have to be very, very careful about.
Yeah, and you can do it with the whole family, but you also have to be careful because there may be people in the family who want to take over, or there may be people in the family who want to put somebody down, kind of in a sneaky way. I had a client once who told me about her family. Every time she came to visit, they would make a big circle of chairs, and everybody would tell her, this particular woman, what was wrong with her. And she actually would sit there and take it until she complained to me about it when we were having a session together. And I said, you know, you don't have to do this. You can just say, no, this is it. I'm not doing this with you. And, you know, just politely leave.
Yeah.
And after one visit, she felt like, this is it, I got it, thank you. So it's all, you know, it's really all up to you, and how do you do things to get them to come out the way you want to without hurting anybody else? So you have to be introspective, and you have to be thoughtful, and you have to be truthful. And that's a big job, you know, in being a human being, is how do you communicate and create without offense for anyone else.
Yeah, and this has been a very, very interesting conversation, Dr. Suzanne, and I really appreciate you taking your time to discuss this with us, because I it just really saddens me that, you know, when I put the Ashanti little audio clip up a bit ago, and, you know, like she said, this world is a crazy world,
yeah.
And all we really have is our family.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish that everybody could try somehow, with maybe some of the tips we gave you today, or by getting on your knees and praying, and you calling on your spiritual power, or however you can manage your emotional stress, use that. Call on that. Call on that higher power to help you deal with those situations, because family is everything.
Yeah.
And
but
it's bad enough to try to deal with these. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
There are some families that are just not going to be able to do that. And in that case, I think that it's helpful to build yourself a family of friends, of people you really trust, who you know love you, and you can talk with and bounce things off of. And that kind of fills the gap, you know, when you have a really dysfunctional family.
Very, very, very good closing point. And, you know, we're going to close on that note, because Suzanne is absolutely correct. If your family is not what you need, if they're not what you need for them to be in your life, then she's absolutely correct. Pull from your circle of friends, because that's why God made friends. So
yeah.
We're coming up on our last few seconds in the show, and Suzanne, we want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. You've done a fabulous job.
Thanks for inviting me, Kathy.
Oh, no problem. We want to thank all of our listeners that dialed in, everyone in the chat room. You guys are wonderful. I love you so much. And Tony, thank you. As usual, thank you for your superb work. I really, really, really appreciate you. So we're going to sign off for now, and you will see us here next week, same time on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we look forward to seeing you next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Oh, hey, it's me. Oh, boy. I was getting some weird sounds in my ear, so when the end music was on, did you hear any clips or did it sound distorted or... The end music? I said the end music, the closing music. Okay. Oh, that may have been, I still had the mic open for Suzanne. It could have been from her because I didn't drop anything. Yeah, she was. I could tell that too. But I could feel it. Well, I don't know. Yeah, what, okay, yeah, tell me about the headset. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Oh, okay, I gotcha. I gotcha. And a lot of times I typed, but then, you know, I had to say something, so I just erased it and didn't even put it up on the screen. So, well, give me your critiques. I mean, how did I do? I mean, I know I fucked up the Ashanti thing big time. Did I rebound it okay? Well, true, but you popped it up on the screen with Ashanti. And then I think somebody was saying, what about Ashanti? Oh, was that him? Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you all right, babe? You didn't say that with too much love in your heart, so. Well, I said somebody, I didn't know it was him. You said, yes, him did. Are you all right? You sure? Mm-hmm. What did I say? You know why I decided to do that, Tony? Because there was so many people. I think that's the largest number we've had in the chat room so far, isn't it? Yeah. It was so many people. He had been talking all throughout the thing, and I had been ignoring him. And I didn't want my people to think that he's ignoring that person. I mean, he kept on with the same thing, same thing, same thing, same thing. So that's why I just said, look, I'll email you. I'm not going to email him. Just to shut him up. Okay, next time, if that ever happens and he comes in there and does that, next time I'll know. So, I mean, that was really the only reason I did. Because that was at the very end when I said that. You know, because I was saying goodbye to everybody and thank you, and then, you know, he popped up on the screen to make sure I saw it. So, So, what about some of the stuff I said, you know, how, you know, you gave me some critiques and, you know, as I go along and some of the things I say and... What about that? Oh, yeah, what about that? Yeah, I felt it, because every time I did it, I was like, damn, shut up, Kathy, stop. And yeah, and it's kind of a, I keep looking at this show as a conversation instead of an interview. Validation, a confirmation that yeah, you're I'm agreeing with you. I am on the same opinion. Yeah. How do you think I did with the you think so? With the upcoming show topics, and you think I promoted that pretty well? Was it about William Patterson or Kimberla or Jen Rowan about the incest or... Incest and child abuse is what it's about. Was that okay? Yeah, because, I mean, I wanted to do them in order of, because I've got Kimberla's picture on my profile and I'm promoting her because she's the biggest one, but next week is William Patterson and the week after is Jane Rowan. I didn't want to skip that week and jump right to Kimberla. So that's why I was trying to go in order of the next few shows that are going to be coming up. So I wanted to, you know, let them know that we got a lot of good stuff lined up, and I think I told them about the book giveaway, did I? I can't remember. The book giveaway, go to my okay, great. And, she did such a great job. She sent me three, and her signature's there, and I'm not going to keep any of those three. I think I'm just going to buy the book, and she sent me a bunch of her little promotional cards. I mean, just a horde of them. I'm like, what you want me to do with these? But, I don't know, I already started reading that book. That book is a bomb. Oh, heck yeah. Yep, so. So what I typically do, and it's probably going to take me the rest of the night to do this, I typically send a thank you note to each person. I'm not going to send one to Tim, so don't, before you, you know, go off on a tangent. I typically send a thank you note to everybody that came into the chat room and, you know, participated and supported me, and I say thank you for, you know, I know it's going to get to the point where I'm not going to be able to do that because it's going to get way too large, but for now, it's only a couple of shows here on Blog Talk that have more people in the chat room, because I think the biggest number of chat room for shows my size are about 15. And the most popular show out here, which is a white show, has, I think, 30 people in their chat room, and I almost got up to that tonight. Because I had 26 there. I think 26 was the high. Mm-hmm. So. Yep. And plus the lines. It was a gazord of people calling in on the lines. I mean, I just kept seeing lines. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go to the line to take a question or if they were just listening. Because a lot of the numbers I recognized. You don't think I said anything to hurt anybody's feelings, Marissa? And you know, baby, and I'm so glad you understand, because you're such a sweetheart. But you know, the question I ask about the adult children, you know, I know Kiana, your child, but I do worry about her like she's my child, and that's why I ask, how do you not worry about that? I mean, I know she said tough love, but that's hard for a parent to do, a tough love thing. I mean, I'm not even her biological parent, and it worries me. So you probably knew who I was talking about when I talked about that one, because I worry about her. I mean, I know Neek is Neek, and you know, she is sick, and that situation. But I know Kiana can help herself, but you know, it just worries me that she's not making good choices, and you know, I just hate to see her suffer like that. So I'm sure you knew that's why I asked that question. But she gave me the same advice you did. The same thing you said, and you're her daddy. You want to make peace with it, and just, you know, accept the fact that she's making the choices that she makes. Help when you want to, and when you can't, don't worry about it. What are you doing, baby? I don't know. What are you doing? I hear you typing. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start sending out my thank you notes, because I got a lot of them. And just kind of do my post-show work. Thank you. Of course, I always listen back and learn. It's just a couple things. I'm not as concerned about you taking a look at the presentation, because I feel pretty good about that. It's just a draft anyway, so if you do have a chance to look at it over the next few days. I kind of would like I got a few events coming up over the next couple of days, and you know, I got this conference this weekend, and I really do want to get those business cards. So if you could kind of try to... distorted. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so if you could just do as little as possible, because all you got to do is just send me whatever you can send me, and I'll, because I got all the cards. Some of them came out fine, they were totally centered, and then others were all distorted and messed up. So I know you can get it centered on there. Yeah, and around the left edge. Just do the best you can. Get there as much as you can, and you know, whatever you can't do, don't even worry about it. I mean, I don't have it right here in front of me, so I can't really tell you, but I do know that there were, how many are on that page? 10? Yeah, out of 10 on the page, I probably got four good ones. Exactly.